Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Life Walk with Christ God. I am Michael, and I want to thank you all for tuning in and coming here. And let's get right off the top of it. I'm not a priest. I'm not a clergy. I'm not a deacon. I am not a rabbi. I'm nobody. I'm not a pastor. I'm not a bishop. I'm a guy who loves to read the Bible. It gives me peace. I love sharing that piece. If you want to enjoy that too, you know what? Tune in. If you want to go ahead and listen, hey, that's great. You know, I'm giving my interpretation. You know, this is my fifth time reading the Bible, and you know, I do believe you got to study and you have to diligently go over it and over it and over it again. It's something that I'm committed to. For myself, it's the only thing that has brought me peace. So I hope you enjoy and you know, come along. You know, if it helps somebody, excellent. But it's just fun to do. But like I said, it's open to interpretation. So with that, let's just kind of move on. Anyway, what we have here is we're getting into, in the New International Version, we're getting into Daniel. Daniel 1. I decided to go with Daniel tonight. I really love this book. And it's very inspirational in some of the things. And it does show God's mercy, God's grace, and everything that he has done, and, you know, not to mention the things that I've seen in my life and experienced myself. But let's go ahead. We're going to get into it. So let's start off by reading that. This is Daniel 1. His training in Babylon. If you recall that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had invaded Israel. And because of the sins that you know, the Israelites did and the despicable acts, God was very clear about that. And he said, I'm going to disperse you everywhere. I'm going to remove you from the land. I'm going to do all these things until you come back and you repent and you acknowledge that I am the Lord, the sovereign Lord, your God. So let's get on with it.
The book of Daniel, chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility. Young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service.
Now, you'll notice in there, there's a couple of things that you've seen throughout the Bible, which is, you know, when they were making sacrifices to God, always the first lambs, the firstlings, and everything was without blemish, without spot, without defect. Kind of like how this king here is doing, except for he believes in a different God. He has not come to know God yet. And you notice 3 years. The numerology in the Bible is actually incredible. You'll see this for 3 days. You know, Jonah was in a fish, or this went on for 3 days. This went on for 7 days. This went on for 6 days. It's very interesting, and it's over and over and over again. The same thing with the feet, walking. And then you'll start to realize that there's a pattern, and the pattern with it is walking with Christ, walking with God. And, you know, the cleansing of the feet. Then you go all the way back to Moses And it was, you know, on the mount there, and he said, take your sandals off. The place that you are standing is the most holy of grounds. So you can see a lot of these things are going to come into play. So this is very interesting how this is going on. And we're going to learn about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But before they became that, you have to understand, Daniel, the new names to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah was Shadrach, to Mishael was Meshach, and to Azariah was Abednego. So you can see how they're getting not only renamed, but they've been taken out, they're being trained in everything that the Babylonians want. They're, you know, the best of the best. And you can see where this is kind of going, the favoritism that's going to be happening here. So let's move on with it.
Among those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief officials gave them new names, to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would then have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead. To these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Daniel 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time, because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is only one penalty for you."
And you could see right there, setting this scenario setting up. Not the first time we've seen this throughout the Old Testament. As a matter of fact, we saw it in Genesis when it went back to Joseph. And Joseph was in prison, and he was dealing with the cupbearer, and he was, you know, and the baker. And he, when they had their dreams, he interpreted it, and he told them, listen, you will go back to the cupbearer. You will go back to your place of honor. You, the baker, you're done. And you're not going to be anymore. But those two were, you know, and it came true, just as he had said that, just as Joseph had told them that. But when Pharaoh himself had started to have dreams, he did the same thing. He brought the enchanters in, he summoned the magicians, and everyone, and of course, nobody could interpret the dream. And it wasn't until that the cupbearer said, well, you know what? When I was in prison, I remember this happened. And he told us our dreams, and sure enough, it came true, just as he said, I'll bet he can do it. So here we are now at Daniel, and we're seeing the same thing again. We're seeing this conflict is coming to a head right now. And he's very clear. Nebuchadnezzar is very clear. King Nebuchadnezzar, he's very clear. He says, hey, listen, you either tell me the dream and interpret it for me, or I'm going to dash you. I'm going to chop you up, you know, put you in the grinder and turn it on high, and or you'll tell me what it is, and I will bestow upon you great things. No, really no different. I mean, it was really no different, except for maybe the dramatics of this one of you're going to pay with your life if you can't do it. But you'll see this. It's all conflict here. And then we're going to watch how it comes to a reconciliation. And then it'll come to a conflict again. And then a reconciliation. This is throughout the entire biblical account of everything, pretty much. You know, every issue, every problem, and everything else. And I like to say that, you know, after experiencing this and going through it as many times as I had, you can go back to where Ecclesiastes, I believe it's one, Ecclesiastes 1:2, and you can go back. And of course, nobody really knows who wrote Ecclesiastes, but there are clues in there that it was Solomon. So, you know, King David's son. So very interesting. But one of the things that he says in there is, there's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new that hasn't happened before. There's nothing new which will happen again. Show me something new. But there is nothing new under the sun. Everything is, you know, pretty much the same. It's never changing. The good things that happen, the bad things that happen, it's all happened before. It happened back then. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening today. So here we are in this. So let's get on back to it now.
I've conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me. The astrologers answered the king, there's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician, or enchanter, or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer.
I'm sorry, that's my mother is coming back. She went next door to go visit. But one of the very cool things is now Daniel has gotten involved in this. because the king really looks up to him, but he's mad at all of them. Obviously, they started off with a very bad spokesperson. So that did not better the situation. I make light of it, but it's not. It pretty much that's exactly what happened here. So let's move on to see what hopefully the reconciliation of this is. Quietly.
Why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went in to the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king."
Now, of course, back then it was a lot different. I can't even imagine what it would have been like to be in direct contact with angels and with God and everything like that. But you want to talk about a guide. We have the advocate within us. And it's amazing. And he leads us and guides us in everyday life. But back then it was, wow. And of course, you'll notice right away, Daniel is a God-fearing man. And all of them are. All of them are God-fearing. And right away, who are they giving the glory and the praise to? Well, they're giving it to God right away. So let's see how this turns out now.
Then Daniel went to Arioch, who the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means." The king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about."
And why would he say that? I mean, after all, didn't he just get the information? Well, here it's making it clear. Daniel is not a wise man. Daniel's not an enchanter. He's not a magician. He's not anything with divination. He is a follower of God. That is God-inspired word that came to Daniel, not this other nonsense. But you notice that Daniel also had compassion and said, "Listen, don't do this. Don't hurt any of them. Okay, I will tell you this. Don't expect them to do it." And he's telling him, telling the king right away, you're magicians, you're enchanters, you're diviners, you're, you know, all these people of wisdom and everything else. They can't answer this for you. I'm here. You know, please don't do this. Don't hurt them. I mean, and these are really his enemy. Understand, they're in exile. He's being held in exile. They already came and took everything out of Israel, everything out of Judea. They took everything, you know, from Jerusalem. They've already done all that. So you could see the mercy that Daniel has. He's very upstanding. He's very upward and outward towards all mankind, evenly, lovingly, with care. So let's see what happens here.
"But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar, what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you were lying in bed are these. As your majesty was lying there, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but so that your majesty may know the interpretation and that you may understand what went through your mind. Your majesty looked, and there before you stood a large statue, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were all broken to pieces.
And you could kind of get a rock was cut out and it smashed them. You're already getting a sense here of what is that stumbling block? What is this that has smashed this statue that he has dreamed about? I look at it a few ways. Christ coming. It's a prophecy of Christ coming. It could also be a future force, a future group or warriors of the Medes, the Persians, because I believe that's who came and conquered Babylonia afterward. But these things are all preparation. But I look at, you know, the different theological ideas that it could have been all the way through. It's going to end up being, well, I'm going to save it for y'all, but you could kind of see the relationship. And why I say what I say is because in the Old Testament is the Old Covenant and the New Testament is the New Covenant. And Christ is the cornerstone. So all these things must come to fruition from the Old Testament to the New Testament. So it is another way, metaphor of what, you know, it could be. But I think that it's going to be, whether it's through another army, another group or kingdom. Well, let's find out.
And became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream. And now we will interpret it to the king. Your majesty, you are the king of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands, he has placed all mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds in the sky. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will arise, inferior to yours. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron. For iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. Just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of a mountain, but not by human hands.
And there it is. So we could already see the prophesying of what is to come in the New Testament. It's cut out of hands, not a rock cut out, not of human hands. It's going to be a permanent kingdom forever. I mean, it's wonderful how you can start to see the parallels, and then you can start to see everything that is kind of falling in place all the way through. It's very interesting to follow. Let's move on. Here we go.
A rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true, and its interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor, and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court.
Boy, very familiar, right? Almost, I mean, it just kind of lines right on up with what happened with Joseph. I mean, you know, back in Genesis. And you can see now that the prophesying talking about, this is about the future. All these kingdoms here are going to fall. They're all going to fall. There's not going to be one left except for the perfect kingdom, the perfect heaven. And we know that because even in Revelation, it is going to tell us, hey, the earth is going to pass away, the heavens are going to pass away, and a new earth and a new heaven will then come. From all of this mess, but everything is going to be fulfilled, and the new coming and the idea of all this is the new covenant with Christ coming and the new way that he's doing. So it's very interesting how this is going to play out. So let's keep going here.
Daniel 3. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up.
And we know this is exactly what got Judah, got Jerusalem and Israel, got them all in trouble, was setting up high places to Baal, to Moloch, sacrificing children, where God said in Jeremiah, because of your despicable acts and the things that you do that never crossed my mind, that never entered my mind. And what he meant by that was no one commanded you to do that. You did this upon your own accord. Nobody commanded you. I never once even thought it would be a command, but you did it. And of course, he's punishing them for doing all these things and for worshiping Baal, for worshiping Molech and Balaam and everyone else. I mean, it was just, and here Nebuchadnezzar is, because he has not quite come to know God yet, but he will. And he will in a big way. And of course, it says image. You notice it doesn't say what's an image of. It's just image. Why? Because it's irrelevant. It really doesn't matter what the image of, you know, is of. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is he's getting people, forcing them to try to worship this image. And God does not like that. Okay? Don't. That's idolatry. And don't do it. Very clear about it. So let's see what's going on here.
At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "May the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace."
Have you ever had the opportunity?
Oops, we somehow got lost there. The interesting part of that was that, and we're going to get right back to it. And I'm going to find it real quick. If you remember, Lucifer being in heaven was an angel God had created that had a perfect musical gifts, musical talents, beautiful, talented, just beyond. I mean, obviously, God created him perfect. So the problem was that Lucifer wanted the worship to come to him, instead of come through him and go to the Lord, instead of saying, "Hey, you know, you play beautiful," and him turning and saying, "God, give the glory to God, my Father. He gave me the talent to do this." No, he's, "Yes, I do. I boast and arrogant." And of course, that's what got him into trouble. This is the same thing that you are seeing here. So, we're going to get on. I'm going to do, and let's make sure, because I think we're on, I'm going to go right to 4. Nope, I'm going to go back to 3.
Daniel 2.
Nope, 3.
Daniel 3.
So let's.
King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps.
And I'm turning it up. I'm kind of moving it along, but I'm going to go back to it a little bit.
Magistrates and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, You must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "May the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?"
And there is the big mistake he makes. First of all, he says, what god? Okay, first he says, my gods. You have to worship my gods. And this image, he set this thing up and he has labeled it as a god. It's gold. It doesn't say what the image is. Like I said, it's irrelevant, but it's gold. And he set this image up. And then he goes further and takes a step further down the trap of his own deceit. And he says, listen, who's going to rescue you from my hand then? And he's not giving any acknowledgement of God above at all. None. So, and like I said, you could see all the different things that are going on. Lucifer was great at playing every one of those instruments, all kinds of instruments. Okay. And this is what war happened in heaven, was because of this. I'm going to be better than God. I'm going to be better than God. Well, you're seeing that. And then here, notice what he's got playing. Whenever you hear this, these musical instruments. So who is driving Nebuchadnezzar here at this point? He's tripping down the road of just a bad path. It's a bad path. And let's see what happens on this thing now.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace.
And you'll notice here, 7 times hotter than what it is. You can take that. You can cross-reference that. Go on up to Matthew. How many times should I forgive my brother? 7 times, Lord? No, 77 times. And you saw this. Go on all the way on back to Laban, and you'll see back then. Surely if the Lord will avenge Cain 7 times, he will avenge me 77 times. So if you pay attention and you see this, you will see all these not just on the surface of what's happening, but look and see how all this applies elsewhere, and it will pop right on out at you. That's one of the wonderful things that I've learned from going over it and finding peace is that it's almost like, you know, I've always said it's the greatest true love story I've ever read. No wonder it's been the number one book ever, bestselling. But the bottom line is that it's one of these things, it's almost a puzzle too. There's so much information in there that we have not gotten yet, but it's in there and it's deep within inside, but you have to know how to peel back some of the layers to see some of the different things. So the numbers are incredible alone, but it's just everything that goes on. And there's three of them, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, there's three. So, I mean, it's all these different things. And, of course, we know Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. We also know on the third day he rose. It's all the different things that are going on. So, and like I said, Jonah and the whale, you know, 3 days. but it is absolutely wonderful to be able to see these things and attach them on and say, okay, wow, now what else am I missing? What else can I go in there and take from this and see from this? And the Bible has, it's 63,799 different cross-references. Yeah, absolutely wonderful. And you can see it's very elaborately just, it's incredible. Well, let's go ahead. Let's move on.
So these men wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, "Weren't there three men that we tied up and threw into the fire?" They replied, "Certainly, your majesty." He said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the fourth looks like a son of the gods." Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon.
And it's very interesting. Now that the king has witnessed this, he's starting to realize, okay, not only did these guys defy me and just ignore me and everything else, and in my wrath, I punished them, but I didn't punish them at all. As a matter of fact, they made it clear to me before it was even going to happen that, no, God will rescue them. He will protect them in their faith, in their belief. You know, they just had all the trust in the world in God. And that's really what we need. And of course, to his amazement, he is now coming to the conclusion. He's coming to the matter of, wow, okay. you know, there is a God, a creator. And you notice he went right to an angel and he said, all dressed in white, like the son of a God. And it's very interesting. You could take what you want from that. There's a lot of different ways that I like to look at it or interpret that, but it doesn't really matter because no matter what, the bottom line is that they were protected. They were unharmed. And the soldiers who took them up there to deliver this punishment, it cost them their lives. So let's go on here.
Daniel 4, King Nebuchadnezzar, to the nations and peoples of every language who live in all the earth, may you prosper greatly. It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at home in my palace, contented and prosperous. I had a dream that made me afraid. As I was lying in bed, the images and visions that passed through my mind terrified me. So I commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be brought before me to interpret the dream for me. When the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners came, I told them the dream, but they could not interpret it for me. Finally, Daniel came into my presence, and I told him the dream. He is called Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and the spirit of the holy gods is in him. I said, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery is too difficult for you. Here is my dream, interpreted for me. These are the visions I saw while lying in bed. I looked, and there before me stood a tree in the middle of the land. Its height was enormous. The tree grew large and strong, and its top touched the sky. It was visible to the ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful, its fruit abundant, and on it was food for all. Under it the wild animals found shelter, and the birds lived in its branches. From it every creature was fed. In the visions I saw while lying in bed, I looked, and there before me was a holy one, a messenger coming down from heaven. He called in a loud voice, cut down the tree and trim off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the animals flee from under it and the birds from its branches, but let the stump and its roots bound with iron and bronze remain in the ground in the grass of the field. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him live with the animals among the plants of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man, and let him be given the mind of an animal till seven times pass by for him. The decision is announced by messengers. The holy ones declare the verdict, so that the living may know that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes and sets over them the lowliest of people. This is the dream that I, King Nebuchadnezzar, had. Now, Belteshazzar, tell me what it means. For none of the wise men in my kingdom can interpret it for me, but you can, because the spirit of the holy gods is in you. Then Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, was greatly perplexed for a time, and his thoughts terrified him. So the king said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its meaning alarm you. Belteshazzar answered, my lord, if only the dream applied to your enemies and its meaning to your adversaries. The tree you saw, which grew large and strong, with its top touching the sky, visible to the whole earth, with beautiful leaves and abundant fruit, providing food for all, giving shelter to the wild animals, and having nesting places in its branches for the birds. Your majesty, you are that tree. You have become great and strong. Your greatness has grown until it reaches the sky, and your dominion extends to distant parts of the earth. Your majesty saw a holy one, a messenger coming down from heaven and saying, cut down the tree and destroy it, but leave the stump bound with iron and bronze in the grass of the field while its roots remain in the ground. Let him be drenched with the dew of heaven Let him live with the wild animals until seven times pass by for him. This is the interpretation, Your Majesty, and this is the decree the Most High has issued against my lord, the king. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox and be drenched with the dew of heaven. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes. The command to leave the stump of the tree with its roots means that your kingdom will be restored to you when you acknowledge that heaven rules. Therefore, Your Majesty, be pleased to accept my advice. Renounce your sins by doing what is right, and your wickedness by being kind to the oppressed. It may be that then your prosperity will continue. All this happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is not this the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence by my mighty power and for the glory of my majesty?" Even as the words were on his lips, a voice came from heaven. "This is what is decreed for you, King Nebuchadnezzar. Your royal authority has been taken from you. You will be driven away from people and will live with the wild animals. You will eat grass like the ox. Seven times will pass by for you until you acknowledge that the Most High is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and gives them to anyone he wishes." Immediately, what had been said about Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled. He was driven away from people and ate grass like the ox. His body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair grew like the feathers of an eagle and his nails like the claws of a bird. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At the same time that my sanity was restored, my honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. My advisors and nobles sought me out, and I was restored to my throne and became even greater than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of Heaven, because everything he does is right and all his ways are just, and those who walk in pride he is able to humble.
So what you're getting out of that is, now through all these different things happening, and Daniel has interpreted these dreams for him, and they've come to fruition, just as it happened with the cupbearer in Genesis with Joseph, that dream, and just as it happened with Pharaoh. And that's why he put Joseph in charge. And Joseph didn't even want to be in charge. "Oh, no, you've got wise men. There's no one here wiser than you. You're the one who interpreted the dream." Well, the same here. So Daniel's in this great position. And Nebuchadnezzar has went from worshiping other gods, setting up an image of gold, making known that he's almost a god, who can take you out of my hand, to, "Okay, I get it now, you know. I've eaten grass, I've done this, I've been humbled, I've been humiliated, beaten down to the point where we're all looking at it saying, well, look at you now." And then restored. So there is that conflict, and there is the reconciliation again, the coming back, which is absolutely wonderful. And we're seeing, and again, you can see how many times? Seven, three, seven, three, seven. You're seeing that numerology again all the way through, you know. And, of course, the tree being up, you know, high up and everything. God put Nebuchadnezzar in that situation, the enemy, to punish Israel, to punish Judea. He's done that. And now all of a sudden, he's a believer. He now accepts and realizes there's no one higher than God. Here it is. It's not God's. It's God. His. And he went down singular. And it very interesting. So it's a wonderful book. And I love just reading into it. Like I said, it's very hard for a lot of people to start off reading the Bible. Very difficult. I still get stuck in so many places. And if I don't have an answer, if you have a pastor, if you have somebody that you know, is well-versed in this stuff, I'm nobody. I'm just a guy that loves to read the Bible. But if you do, ask them the questions or whatever, they might have, they're going to have better interpretations than I am. It is open to interpretation. The bottom line is the Bible is here to do two things, okay? To get to know God, have a relationship with God, and to get to know his son, Christ, and the covenants, the two covenants. And they're important to know because you have to understand as the first covenant is gone and is passed because it was fulfilled. That's why Christ says in Matthew, I didn't come here to abolish the laws or the prophets or any of that. I came here to fulfill that. So now that's done. So now we have the new covenant with Christ, and his teachings were totally different and relatable to us. But you do have to study it because you have to understand the parables. You have to understand all the different things going on. But you can see exactly all these prophets that led right on up talking about what is going to happen in the future and how God using the disciples weren't the greatest guys in the world, okay? They weren't. And yet he used them for good. And the same thing here with Nebuchadnezzar. He's not the greatest guy in the world, but he's using him for good. And all of a sudden now he is a believer. He understands. So, hey, listen, with that, guys, we're done for tonight. Like I said, I read this for peace of mind. It gives me a sense of balance, especially with the troubled mind that I have. So it kind of gives me that calm, calms my anxiety a lot and helps with my depression. And I can only encourage you to, get a relationship with God. God is good. He's awesome. And with Christ and come to believe and don't make sure that you stick to it. And that's one of the things. But anyway, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. I hope that you have a great and wonderful week. And great shows coming up tonight. So Live Laugh or whatever's coming up with Stu Scheer. Tomorrow night, Offsides, college football. So, man, I'm looking forward to that. Always do. Great show. With the two hosts, all the hosts here, but wonderful shows. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I'm grateful, and I hope you have a very good night. Bye, y'all.